This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello. I got a message come up saying my mic is muted, so already I don't know what I'm doing. But you guys can hear me, right? You'll let me know if you can't. So anyway, yep, I'm not D. You could tell this. You could see we have different faces, we're different ages. I don't start by saying, what's going on? And let's go! Or anything like that. I don't have a brand. But and I'm not going to apologise for that because he stuck me with this show. He knew what would happen. And we've got to look at a 5-0 defeat in the worst possible terms. Patrick O'Connor and Cara Rain with me. Sorry. Patrick is only here for a little while. He decided to join, even though he said he wouldn't, because he's got something he wants to get off his chest. I don't know what it is, really. I don't know what it's about. Looking forward to seeing it. Probably something... Nothing relating to football or anything like that. I'm sure it's just some general comments on the state of the world today, I think, probably. So, but yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, nothing really happy to talk about today, depending on your perspective. Maybe, you know, this being potentially the straw that breaks the camel's back with Roy Hodgson, that could easily be a positive for some people, I'm sure. Look, really poor game. There's no getting away from it. Frankly, I felt like we'd lost the game before it even started. The lineup we put out was pretty predictable, lacked any real pace. And then when I saw the players line up with a back three, and I kind of feared the worst. We got to minute four, and all of the players, the entire Palace outfield 11, was in our own defensive third, 4 minutes into the game. And that's the point for me where I kind of just knew this is going to go really, really badly today. If Arsenal were able to force our entire team back into our own defensive third in the first 4 minutes of a match, we have not got the right attitude for this. We've not got the right mentality. And we don't really have a plan, you know, at all to try and get anything out of the game. But our plan was, let's see if we can get a point if we're lucky. And I think even before the game, I didn't watch Roy's comments because frankly I can't anymore, but I read along the lines of, you know, our plan is to keep it tight, our plan is to stay competitive and, you know, try to get through to half time and probably have a go later on. But you know, that's been the case against pretty much every single opponent we've had this season as well, which is another reason why, for me, the time is up. But anyway, I'll get into all of that, I'm sure. But I suppose initial reactions from yourself. If I start with you, Cara, and then we can hand over to Patrick for his 45-minute rant.
We're like on the warm-up act.
Yeah.
Let's see where to start, yeah. I mean, it's just shit, wasn't it? Like I don't even know if there is much point in us going through the game, to be honest, which I appreciate is what a live reaction show is for, but I don't think any fan is coming out of that going like, oh, let's look at, you know, what we did wrong at the back or whatever. Like it's the epitome of just where we are as a club at the moment. I think there have been times where, like, on the pitch hasn't represented or flattered us a little bit, if you can believe it, in terms of like how much of a mess we're in as a club. And I think this is now just really the chickens coming home to roost. I said it like beginning of the season that was worried that we were going to be kind of the Leicester City of this season, like the on paper team that were too good really to go down. So like people didn't really worry or whatever. And we just, we've had some half decent kind of goals, moments on the pitch, whatever, but I watched quite a lot of Leicester last season and we are really looking like we are repeating their season this time. The only thing in our favour at the moment is that other clubs are getting points deducted. Like, I really think that FFP is going to potentially do us a massive favour. But I did hear on the radio the other day that I don't think the appeal date is until after the season finishes anyway. So we might not even be able to rely on FFP to save us. It's just dire. Like, I wish we could just write this off as like it's just one of those freak results that, you know, it happens, whatever, we'll get past it. Like, I think all of us know it's not. Like, it's just a lot of shit going on in the background and it's flooded through onto the pitch.
No, I think that's completely fair. It as you say, it doesn't feel like a freak result. It feels like a result that's been coming for some time. And it's not like Arsenal came into this game on a tremendous run of form. You know, lots of people kind of joking before the game, well, this is that opportunity for Arsenal to get back to, you know, back to winning ways and so on and so forth. But it wasn't a joke. It's a 100%, you know, fact. We knew it. We knew exactly how we'd set up. We knew exactly what the problems would be. And we lived it today. Patrick.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on an epic rant as Dee did on the last show, but it's incredibly frustrating. First, thanks everyone who's tuned in today. We have 262 of you guys tuned in. Don't forget the like button, subscribe. But I want to go to Sam's comment here. I'd never be more depressed to be a Palace supporter. This is not us. This is not our way. Ownership must change. Management must change. The investors must change. Sam, 100%. And that's where I am. This is not a Hodgson issue. Everyone knows I've had a Hodgson. Hodgson should never have been brought back. He was. Then he brought back for another City season. It made no sense. But the team is just rotten. It's just rotten from top to bottom. And it's incredibly frustrating. I would say embarrassing, but I've been a Palace fan for so long. I've been more embarrassed than this than 5-0 away to Arsenal. I just have. Mm. But it's just frustrating to think that we could be so much better than we are. And we are stuck in this awful malaise because Steve Parrott decided to sack a manager and bring in someone who we all knew would keep us up, but was not the future. And the fact that he is still here, and now this is one win in 12. I'm not going to become Statman Pat, but I could if I wanted to. The stats right now are absolutely awful. On set pieces, we are a disgrace. We are awful. And that was something that Hodgson would lay his cap on. He was a defensive coach who did not give up goals from set pieces. And what has he done to come back? Set piece goals. It's been awful. And the lineup again, Jeffrey Schlupp and Will Hughes in the same midfield is never going to work. He puts Eze on the wing, something we complain about Vieira for, and they leave him on for the entire match after stating on the midweek he couldn't play an entire match. And we're down at that point when he made the last one. I think we were down 3-0. He brings on France and Ahamada. Puts France on the right, he's a left-sided player, and he puts Ahmed at right wing back. Okay, Roy, picture what you've done for us so far. Seriously, it's time to go. Seriously, it is honestly time to go. The Tompkins one, I have no problem. Mm. Yeah, he was clearly injured, clearly couldn't run. But honestly, the other subs made absolutely no sense. The lineup made no sense. I'm begging Parrish. I'm begging Roy. Either Parrish has to sack him or Roy has to walk. And I mean today, not even tomorrow.
Yeah.
The banner was great. It's not enough. He has to go.
Yeah. There's a lot of comments on that banner in the chat as well, saying what a great job it was. And you know, also agreeing strongly with you. And a couple of people talking about Roy at the end. You know, not clapping the fans, but also he was transfixed on that banner and reading it. And that's when the thought popped into my head, Patrick, that actually maybe he'll walk before anything else happens, because he won't want that, you know. You know, it's just, not just for the fact that that, you know, he does care, but it's more to the point that, you know him, he's got an awful lot of pride in what he does, and for it to not be working. Do you know what this reminded me of? And a lot of people probably watching this will have absolutely no memory of this, because, you know, I'm old. Not as old as you, Patrick, I'm older, which is always pleasing. But I'm quite old. And this reminded me of that, the Stevie Kemba Wigan away. Do you remember that? Where it was like, you know, it was, you know, Simon Jordan, chairman at the time, come out and said, like, we need a performance.
Yeah.
And we got absolutely spanked all over the pitch against Wigan when we were all hoping for this kind of, like, at least we don't mind whether we win or lose or draw. We just want to see some pride and some effort. We want to see a team that tries to win the game and doesn't sort of take that negative approach of saying, well, they're too good for us, so we're not going to try. We kind of expected something, some kind of a reaction. And it happened again today. You got the start of the game, and pre-match Roy saying they're a very good side, but, you know, we're happy with the underdog tag. Well, I didn't think that meant we're happy with the underdog tag, as in we're quite happy taking the loss and not bothering, because that's basically what today was. It was like, let's not bother. Like, yeah, if that's not the intention, which I'm sure it wasn't. Cool.
Sorry, Amber, I was just going to say, you'd be forgiven watching that, thinking that we're still in the FA Cup, and that was like a sixth club who've drawn Arsenal, and it's, you know, even then I think a team in that situation would have probably, like, been set up better than we were, because they would have, you know, given everything to try and get something out of it.
Yeah, but what even was the attempt at the cup, if you think about it now? Give it the context of today. Like, taking players off when you're 1-0 down to Everton, as you were saying, Patrick, taking Eze off at that point, protecting it. Like, so at that point, we're saying we're giving up on the cup to make sure we got some form of preparation for today. Well, if that's preparation for today and we got spanked, and it could have been a lot worse than 5-0. Like, as you said, Patrick, it's by nowhere near the worst thing that's ever happened to me watching Palace, you know. Not even in the top 500, but it's still not good enough. And you just think, okay, well, what was the cup then? You know, and I would go all the way back to the game against Everton at Selhurst, you know, it being 0-0, and the action we took around an hour in, a little bit more than an hour, to shut up shop. Like, seriously, just at that point, the only logical thing to do is to go, okay, win or lose. Doesn't matter, win or lose, because we've got an hour in, we haven't nicked a goal, we can't afford a replay, we don't have a big squad. You know, we know the fixture list ahead. So let's just manage things properly. And Roy has completely lost the plot with managing things. He manages game to game, moment to moment. He has no eye on the future of the football club. There is he'll talk a great game about being concerned with the future of Crystal Palace and how much he loves the club. But when it comes down to it, it all goes out of the window on game day. He does not care. And, you know, the biggest failing of his as a manager, the biggest failing of his is to complain that the players he has don't have experience while simultaneously refusing to give them experience. If you play bunch of these players at the start of this season, like Hamada is a clear example of that. He played 26 games in the Bundesliga. Yeah, he still isn't probably Premier League ready. But there were so many opportunities to play him in his rightful position and give him, you know, 30 minutes here, 45 there, get him up to speed. And he hasn't done it. And now Hamada is a waste of time, because we're chucking him on in games and saying, right, go do something. You go play right wing back against Arsenal when you're 3-0 down. Oh, look, we didn't win the game 4-3. So he's a waste. Like, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's Roy all over. He creates a bunch of scenarios. I'm sorry, because I'm going on a rant and I know everybody else wants to speak, but, like, you know, to me, Roy does this with our whole squad. He looks at the limitations of the squad. You know, I could go through every single position, but I'll pick my favourite. So he looks at right back and he says, okay, right back, I've got Klein or Ward. Ward's my captain, right? So Ward's going to play every week because I made him my club captain, because he's been around forever and he's got a great leader, blah, blah, whatever the reasons. But I'm going to play Ward every week. But because I'm playing Ward every week, I can't play a system that enables the fullback to get forward. I need to play to Ward's strength, which means he's going to drop inside and act as an additional centre back the majority of the time, which leaves that flank completely open. which means whoever's playing on the right-hand side has to do 50-50 defensive and attacking work at best. So that completely changes the way you have to play. But then he does it the same thing with Jeffrey Schlupp. He goes, okay, I'm going to play Jeffrey Schlupp basically every single week. He's not fit. He's lost his pace. He can't pass forwards. But he does some really good things running around. And if I ask him to do those every week, he does them every week. So I get to the end of my game analysis and I say, okay, I'm looking at my game analysis of Jeffrey Schlupp. He successfully completed the number of blocks I wanted him to create to complete. He successfully positioned himself in the positions that I wanted him to do. He played within his capabilities exactly as I asked. Therefore, he gets picked every week. But just because he does everything he's asked, it doesn't mean he's the right person to play in the midfield, because he isn't, because he's not good enough. And there's so many Palace players that you can say that about right now in terms of Roy picking them every week. But he started to do this thing of like picking people in really odd positions and making odd decisions about whether he's got, you know, a host of midfielders to choose from, but he chooses to play Richards. And like, actually, I like Chris Richards and I thought he'd been outstanding as a central defensive midfielder. But then we've moved him into a back three today, and like Anderson and Gay didn't seem to like playing in back three, and Richard seemed completely lost. So why do we do that? Why is that? What's the tactical decision there that it kind of worked in us losing against Everton? It becomes, again, it's this self-fulfilling thing of limiting yourself, telling yourself that this is the only way you can do things, and then saying it proves your point because, you know, we nearly won a game or whatever. But the result today, you can't hide behind. I will be absolutely shocked if he continues as Palace manager. I really would, because it's indefensible right now.
I don't know which way to fall
anyway,
on this.
I had loads more I wanted to say. Good, Cara.
Sorry. No, I just, there were two main points I wanted to make. Just the first one, coming back on what you just said there, is that like any normal club, he would be gone. We are not a normal club. way that we have been managed, like just the last couple of years in particular. Now, these cracks were there all the way along, but fine. Like decent enough decisions were being made. We were getting good loanees in, whatever. Like we were fine. Like we were okay. Chaotic at time, whatever. Parish and the way that the club is run under Parish has run out of road. And it was, the signs were there starting a couple of seasons ago. People didn't want to accept it. I get that. He certainly doesn't want to accept it. I get that. He's rich compared to any of us, but in terms of the other kind of football people he's going up against, he's not. So he's wanting to cling on to that as long as possible. Fair play to him, whatever. But his plan, surely, and I think most fans now on this page, that his plan was, we'll just get through this season. Luton, Sheffield United, like we've got two England goalkeepers, we do now. We've got Gay, we've got Ezra, we've got the players that can just see us through this season. Let's not worry too much. We'll get through it, do whatever he needs to do, and we'll kick on next season or come up with a plan next season. And it's not working. I don't think he's the type of person that has a plan B. I think his plan B when Roy Hodgson isn't the manager is pull the trigger quick and get like safety hands in. Who are the safety hands behind Roy Hodgson if you're going to pull the trigger on him? He doesn't have anyone. Roy Hodgson is his safety blanket, you know, like a toddler that needs the same blanket or just keeps going back to the same blanket whenever they're stressed, worried, whatever. I don't know who he goes to unless he's going to shock us all. And that work has been going on in the background over kind of Christmas and whatever, with the kind of writing on the wall. I don't know, but I will actually be more amazed if he does do the right thing and sack Roy. Not because I don't think he should, but because all of the signs say that he's just going to bury his head in the sand and just hope for the best until the end of the season. Patrick, I'll hand over to you because I know you don't have much time, but I'll come back in after you for something else.
Yeah.
Got a few others who want to join in as well.
I'll bring them on in a second. I got you, Tim and Mason. I see you guys in the background. I'll get you on in a minute. But did you guys see... I'm looking for a comment in the chat, but there's a ton of comments. Potter was in the stands. And I have a friend who thinks that there's a link. I'm telling you right now, there is no way Potter comes to Palace. I can't see it. I just think it's totally...
Yeah.
I had to make that link on during the TV. I cannot see a reason why, at this point, Potter come to Palace. Before the season, possibly. Especially, I'll say again, Steve Cooper is the one that Dougie loves, not Potter. Cooper is still available. It's more like it'd be Cooper to come to Palace than Potter. So I don't want to get. I want to get you guys your view on it before I get. Mason on and then Tim, and I have to jump off. But what do you guys think about Potter being in the stand today?
I mean, I would love it because it'd be funny, right?
Oh,
if we managed to somehow convince Potter to come to Palace, I really rate him. You know, I think
I do too.
You know, he did pick up some work. He did pick up some work that was being done really well at Brighton when he came in. By the way. And you can see he left a really good framework for De Zerbi to come in as well. And he struggled at Chelsea, but everyone would have struggled in those circumstances. So I got a lot of time for him. But, you know, without being too sort of quaint about it, I think at the start of the match, there was a distinctly larger possibility than at the end of the match that he would join us. I think probably as number five went in, you know, there was a kind of spinning chair, if you like, of him just sodding off and you know, mysteriously Brighty and Parrish can't get hold of him by phone now. He must have lost data signal or something like that. You know, he's gone, I think. So, that's what we need. We need somebody who wants to put something in place for the long haul, you know, and bring people through. But, you know, Cara, I'll let you give your view.
Yeah, the first thing I thought, I actually heard it on the radio. I was listening to Five Live as I was kind of sorting things out before the game started. And they were like, whoa, hold on, Potter's in the stands. Like, that stuff doesn't happen by accident. There's just no way. You don't go into the seats that he was in and be there for the world to see at a game like this. And it just be complete coincidence. You just decided he fancied going and watching a game. Doesn't happen. So there's something behind it. What it is, I don't know. I think, again, if we were a normal club, if you kind of look at all of the things that we do have to offer, I think he'd be a great appointment. But it would only work if the way that the club is run is willing to shift to allow that to work. And that is obviously, if those talks are going on, presumably that will be the thing that he's also seeking reassurance on before he'd even consider it, let alone say yes. But I mean, honestly, I'd take my cat managing instead of Roy right now. So yeah, Pot would be great. Like, whoever. But yeah, let's go for it.
All right. So let's get a few guests on before I jump off. So I think Tim, are you here, Tim? So he said he was cooking some food. So maybe I'll go.
Yep, I'm here. Nope. I gotcha.
Tim, Roy's biggest fan. What do you have to say about that today?
I am not Roy's biggest fan, but I have been. I have been. Let me just say a couple quick things, and then I'll give the floor to Mason. This was not worth waking up at 5:30 a.m. for.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Even close. I got the note on my phone at like 4:40 a.m. to see the lineup. And I felt as sick as I did on the night of the Everton replay. It's terrible. Like, you can't tell me, and not that you are trying to tell me this, but I can't think anyone would try to tell me that going into that match, I thought it was lost before kickoff. I thought it was lost before kickoff. With the setup, we looked like a team. I'm so frustrated and depressed and angry, and I don't like being like this because I Patrick will tell you, I'm the guy that tries to bring some, like, I try to see some positives here.
You do.
I don't know what the positives are. What are they? That he's out now? Is that the positive?
That's the positive for me, that he walks or he's fired after today, because if he's still here for Sheffield United, I was talking to someone in our chat.
We're done, right? We're done.
We might get 12 points for the season with this manager. That's going to be 35. That's not going to keep us up. I don't care about point deductions. That will not keep us up this season. I don't care. So,
Patrick, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced that the points deductions are coming. There might be one for Forest. I doubt that there's going to be much of one for Everton. At maximum, this would be, I am loath to agree with Simon Jordan, but I think he nails it. I think there's going to be an appeal, goes down to 6, then they get a 4 point, and now we're at 10, and it's the same. And they're not going to go down on a 10-point deduction. And I don't think Forest has a bad argument that's also a good argument. Forrest's argument is that if we had sold Brennan Johnson during the window in which we were eligible to sell him, we wouldn't have been out of compliance. Fair enough. The problem is other clubs have done that, and you played him. You played him during the window when you could have sold him. So that's a terrible argument. You can't win that. On the other hand, they were in the championship for two seasons. So their FFP calculation is not 105 million. It's 61 million.
Based on 3 2 years.
Right. Exactly. It's 61 million. So will they get a little grace? Probably. I'm not convinced that Forrest is going to get a points deduction. But let me just, because I'm cooking food over there and I don't want to burn the place down. Two quick things here. Okay. The first is I do think Roy has to go. And I promised I would say something about the board here. I think the board is 1,000,000% culpable here. And I am not, Patrick, you know this. I am not anyone but Parrish. I have not been Parrish out. And the reason for that is primarily because I've seen, just in my job, I've seen a lot of nasty people. I've seen a lot of nasty people in football. You don't have to go very far. You just have to look at Di Younger down at Reading to see how bad it can get. Like, it can get horrible. So I am not Parrish out at all costs. But we're kidding ourselves if we don't think that the board needs a refresh, if we can't rethink this. So who, all right, so if that's true, and there is a possibility of selling the club, who do you sell to? I think you have to be incredibly careful in this area. I'm not going to say be careful of what you wish for, because that's not the right thing to say here. There are potentially legitimate owners who could come in and do a good job. The owner for me, the ideal owner, is neither Middle Eastern sports washer or American billionaire. It's somebody who comes in and sees the club as an asset where if you are growing not only the commercial interests of the club, but also the infrastructure and the performances on the pitch so that it is an attractive club to play for, where people are going to want to come in, it has to be a very long-term minded investor who says, I can compound the value of this asset if I'm in it for a long period of time. The only kind of investor who thinks that way, at least here in the States, is more of a venture capital type investor. If you've never done anything with venture capital, a venture capital fund tends to have limited partners who are in it and you are signed up for 10 years. Don't expect any kind of return for 10 years. That's the kind of owner that personally, if that is the thing that we're going to look for, that's kind of where I'm at. I want somebody who's not even thinking about any kind of exit or return for a minimum of 10 years. That's hard to find. That is very, very, very hard to find. But I can't see us doing anything.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Differently than that, I'm burning things here. So I would love to talk with you more. Get Mason on. He's going to say smarter things than me anyway. But I mean,
it's great to have you on.
I love you guys. Hang in there. This was a shit game. It was awful. Yeah. But I mean, yeah.
It was bad.
It wasn't worth waking up for, but up the palace. Love you guys.
All right, Tim. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you. Cheers.
Actually, before
a lot of good stuff there, but yeah, should we hand... Oh, go on.
Yeah, I have to run. So, Kara and Hambo, always great seeing you guys. I'll put Mason on and enjoy the rest of your day. Yeah. I can't get much worse.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, thanks, Patrick. Take care.
Thank you.
Mason, you're taking over from Patrick. No pressure. Just want to just focus your mind. You know, get your inner Patrick going. But honestly, I mean, look, some general thoughts on the game. We can pick up a lot on what Tim was saying and, you know, the comments in the chat. But I just want to get your reaction to and how you're feeling right now.
I think it'll take quite a while for me to get over this result. It is our biggest defeat in just over 3 years since we lost 7-0 to Liverpool. That's our biggest defeat that we've seen. It's now 6 wins in 25 games. At what point does Steve Parish bite the bullet and get rid? What point? Now, the thing is, right, when that banner was raised, Roy looked like he was flooding up. He looked like he was going to burst into tears. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't like to see that, right? As much as I want him to go, and he hasn't helped himself, it sort of hit home that this is not all on him, right? The board need to take ultimate responsibility for this. Rehiring him, we all knew, well, I knew that this was not the appropriate thing to do for a team that was going to be going into the next level phase. You know, we're 20 days into the window. We barely look like we're going to sign anyone. It looks like West Ham are winning the race for Calvin Phillips. So they're going to be the ones getting him. Who are we getting in this window? The players just look, apart from Eze, the rest of them just look, and possibly Jefferson Lerma, the rest of them just look disinterested. You know, it's just a terrible result all round. You know, to lose 5-0 just shows how poor it's been. Now, I know I said in my YouTube video that I've just made that I said that the club is now dead. It needs an electric shock. Now, maybe that was a bit over the top from me because look at Reading. Look at where Reading are. We could be in a lot worse of a situation, right? But what we're saying is that we want to see something. We want to see even the slightest bit of progression. Now, looking at the Sheffield United game, it was in the middle of difficult fixtures because I thought we'd still be in the FA Cup. We're not, but even still, we had Arsenal, then Sheffield United, an easier game, but then we had Brighton, Chelsea, Everton. That was a game that I thought we need 3 points. Do I trust Roy after that to get 3 points or even a point? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to go tonight. I don't want to see delays in it because, to be fair, we've seen delays from the club for years. I mean, you've only got to look at the last January transfer window last year. Didn't sign anyone till deadline day. Probably going to be the same thing happening here. They delay everything. I don't know. The thing is, I know what the next question is going to be. Well, what do you want to see change? My simple answer is, I don't know.
There's a lot to think about, really. And I know, Carl, I'll let you jump in just a sec. I mean, I've been trying to keep my eye on whether Roy Hodgson is commenting after that game. And the live feed across various sites have not featured him yet. So I'm feeling like it's probably just happened. I've seen a comment just drop in there that Roy is probably speaking at this very moment. So I'm really interested to hear what he has to say on the topic. But I think I go back to what you're saying and the way we approach this game and why it's a need for a change. You know, I'll go back a little bit to what I was saying earlier, but elaborate a touch because like one of the things that people get a little bit wrapped up in is feeling sorry for Roy. Like you're talking about, he's looking at the banner, he's welling up. You know, he's had to deal with a lot. It's not the injuries majority. You can't say are his fault. Lots of clubs have had lots of injuries, of course, but you know, we've had injuries to key players and it's been really hard for him. He's not got the strongest squad in the league by any stretch of the imagination. So he can get really tempted to go, no, it's all on the board. It's all on the board. But truthfully, it isn't. There's a bunch of stuff that you can level at the board as criticism. When you actually just nail it down to what Roy's responsibility is as Crystal Palace manager, you know, as I said earlier, his responsibility is not just to the present, it's also to the future of the football club.
Yeah.
So when you have the man in charge who's saying, you know, the young players are not good enough to make an impact. Like, doesn't matter if that's factually true. Like, you don't say it. Like, that, it's not that far off what Troy Deeney got fired for, hanging his players out to dry in the press. You know, got yeah. fired after five or six games, whatever it was. You know, but Roy Hodgson has a duty to make sure that those players are encouraged and valued. And the same with the fringe players as well, that he doesn't say outwardly because, you know, he's old and it doesn't matter, which is basically what he said the other week. Like, it doesn't matter. If you say that your players aren't good enough, and you say that they're not going to be good enough and they're not going to get opportunities, because that came out again this week. You know, the fringe players aren't going to get opportunities with the senior side that I have available now. That's a senior side that he's just put out twice against Everton and couldn't score a goal and just got hammered 5-0 against Arsenal. Exactly. Like, and those are the most recent things that have happened. So when you start feeling sorry for Roy Hodgson, which is understandable because he's a incredible CV, incredible manager, incredible man, but he's just not good enough as a football manager. Yeah. Right? He was incredibly innovative. He came into the Scandinavia in the 70s, right? And he revolutionized football. That's what we need. We need Roy Hodgson from 50 years ago. That's, and I said it right, 50 years. That's why he's not doing it now. He can't innovate. He's been left behind. We need innovation now.
Yeah. I just want to make it like crystal clear. I didn't mean that all the blame has to go on the board. I think Roy's job has been in danger since the end of October when he said about what you're talking about, the youth players. Now, he since apologised, and don't give me all this crap. He didn't apologise because he genuinely felt sorry for what he said. Because what has he done out of pity? He hasn't given the opportunity. Look at the game against Everton on TalkSport. The audio was released of what he said. He said, oh, Franca deserves the same amount of opportunity as a Schlupp. Go and have a look. How many minutes has Schlupp played? And how many minutes has Franca played? I know Franca hasn't been able to play since, I believe, mid to late October. But still, he's had so many opportunities to give him opportunities to gain experience. You know, look at... and he's saying, oh, but it's difficult for Franca, Ozo... and Ahamada to break into this team. What, with Hughes as a number 10, with Eze on the wing, with Schlupp playing on right wing. Now, we brought Schlupp in, what was it now, 7 years ago as a left back. We're now playing him on the right wing. That just shows, I mean, let's just let that sink in for a second. Look at David Ozo. I've said it for a while. I don't think Chris Richards, like, he's not the worst player in the team. But as a DM, he's played a few games there. He's done okay, but would Ozo do better? I think so. I mean, look at the performance against Man City. 70 minutes, replacing Joel Ward, did absolutely brilliantly. I think since he's played equivalent to about an hour of football since.
I just wanted to pick up on a couple of things, Mason. I think everything you've said is... absolutely spot on. There's been a couple of things, and I actually got a few messages from friends, non-Palace friends earlier, saying like, oh yeah, like, you know, the banners and whatever else, but like, it could be a lot worse, blah, blah, blah. And we hear this a lot, like, it could be a lot worse, but it doesn't have to be this bad. Like, and it shouldn't be this bad. Like, no. You look at Brentford, you look at Fulham, you look at even like West Ham. I know they would be like, you know, arguably slightly bigger club than we are. But you look at all of those kind of clubs, they're managing it. So what is it that's so different about Palace that apparently we should just be happy with mediocrity and just kind of say like, cheers, yeah, we'll just go for a lifetime of this and never have anything fun, never have anything good, always just be told like, be thankful for what you've got. Like, it is nonsense. It's a lack of ambition from everybody, really. Anybody who has that mentality of like, I would get it if we were like solidly mid-table, right? If we were always getting up there, always going on different types of cup runs, whatever, playing good football, putting a good display out there, I'd be happy. I'd be happy enough going through 5, 6, 7 seasons of that. absolutely fine. But this is awful, and nobody wants to pay good money. Like, just to kind of take it away from the pitch for a moment and just kind of think about like what people's football club is to them. People are paying very hard-earned cash during a cost of living crisis when things are not easy to go and either watch this football or subscribe to Palace TV, whatever, to watch it, Sky Sports subscriptions, whatever, right? They're paying all of that money out to watch this. It's not fair. And football clubs rely on their fan base and are asking us to keep shelling out, keep shelling out, keep shelling out, and then just tell us we should be lucky just to watch 11 players go out onto the pitch. It is an absolute nonsense. And I think we have to, as a fan base, keep up the pressure to say this isn't good enough. And we're not just going to sit here and say like, yeah, cool, thanks, lads. Like, whatever, we'll just keep watching. Because I think that is the thing that Parrish does feel. He wants to be loved. He wants to be liked. And I think it's going to be really bothering him that he's not got that kind of special one status amongst the fans at the moment. Just to come back on one other thing you said, Mason, is about the window, like 20 days into the window, who are we getting? I don't even know if we know who we want, because what system do we have? What are we aiming to play? And you have to surely be able to answer those questions before you even start looking through a list of potentials.
Yeah.
We're just going to go to the end of the window and go, right, who's left? Who can we maybe get on a loan or on a cheap deal, whatever?
Yeah.
And again, it's not good enough. It's not going to get us anywhere for the second half of the season. It's certainly not going to set us up well for next season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make my last point because I'm being shouted at downstairs for some reason.
Yeah, I got it.
The thing is that in the press conference, Roy was asked about the window and he said, oh, there might be one or two surprises in there. So the key word, surprises, he's not expecting anyone to be signed. Like, do you know what I mean? But the thing is, I go back to your point about, you know, the constant aiming to stay up seasons. It's because Steve Parrish has always had this safety blanket, like you mentioned, to fall upon. I mean, he tried to progress once with Frank de Boer, and then he fell onto Roy Hodgson, kept us in 11th. And I think that it's not obviously the worst thing that could have happened, because we could have been relegated that season. But, you know, we should have had Roy for that season and then keep attempting to progress. And I know we did end up doing that with Patrick Vieira, but instead of, again, attempting to progress again, he's gone back to Roy Hodgson. Like, it just baffles me. It baffled me back in July when he rehired him.
Yeah.
But we're now
same.
In January, after the defeat to Everton, the season has died. The season is dead. Like, I don't know, but thanks for having me on. I could ramble all night about that 5-0. I could ramble all day. But massive thanks. I've got to go. Thank you for having me on. See you later.
Cheers, Mason. Cheers. Been a pleasure, mate. Yeah, an awful lot to say there. There was loads I wanted to comment on, and I also want to cover Roy Hodgson's comments, which are now out. But Jordan's been sitting patiently in his car waiting to come on, so we're going to get him straight on. And Jordan, do you know what? The floor is yours. Whatever you feel you need to say, whatever you want to get off your chest, go for it.
Well, hello, everyone, to begin with. But yeah, the game was terrible. I've prolonged my Gobbinock day by 2 hours just to watch that crap. and I think Roy needs to go, but I don't think you can get any manager in and he'll do a terrible job because of the ownership model we currently have. Mm. You know, I'm not Parrish out. I think Parrish has done what he can. He hasn't got the finances to put into the club. So when he didn't have the finances, he sold his shares to Texter, who bought his shares. And then Parrish put all the money he got then into the club. So Texter hasn't really put anything into the club. He's just bought the shares off him. And Harris and Blitzer, they just loan the club money. So any money they give, we have to pay back anyway, which can work depending on how Parrish works it. Because I don't think a loan system being loaned money will work, because then we just have less money every season. And until that changes, I don't see any manager coming in and doing a decent job.
Do you not think, Jordan, that is the like issue with Parrish staying, though? Like, I would agree. I don't think Parrish is a bad guy. Let's like get that out there. But I think when I say like, I think his ownership and the way that he runs the club has reached the end of the road, it's kind of because of what you're saying, because he's run out of options. He's kind of all he's got left is that he's the decision maker. Now, I don't have lots of money, so it's hard for me to sit there and go into the mentality of someone that does. But see, if I did and I wanted to funnel it into a football club, I don't think I'd be happy just handing over all my cash and the guy going, yeah, cheers for that. I'll keep you updated on what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. So I think Parrish needs to stay at least on a chairman level just because of he can keep the culture of the club together. I think if you just got rid of anyone, of everyone, and brought in some random fella with, or lady with more money, I think the club would just go down the pan anyway. I like the idea of using the academy.
Yeah. No, you're right. The culture and everything that comes out in terms of what's said, you know, I'm always behind. I think, you're articulating that well, Jordan. It's always something where we understand, yeah, we're proud of the area we're in. We want to bring through our own kids. We're going to invest money in doing that. But the two things aren't really marrying up. But I think what we're articulating is that actually just to compete in the Premier League takes a lot of money. And Tim was sort of saying it a little bit earlier in terms of the type of person you're looking for to come in and put money into a football club. It's essentially somebody who's not really going to miss it. You know, they put the money in. If they get it back in, you know, a decade's time, great. If it all goes horribly wrong, then at least they had fun doing it. And that's kind of what you're looking for now. If you don't want to go down the route of hard-nosed investors trying to use the system to make money, and you know, realistically, all entire countries looking to use the system to do things with money. Let's just leave it at that, so I don't get sued. But you know, I think we're in that position now where most people still respect Steve Parrish because he's been quite open in the past about how hard that job is. You know, how did he actually achieve making us a competitive club? And he's trying to do it by increasing our revenue. So that the big slow haul, let's get the stand built. But if you start analysing it, like, we have a horrible habit of saying we're doing something before we even know if we can. And that's where people lose a bit of trust in him. The fact that how long the stand situation has got taken to get resolved, it's perfectly understandable if you look at each step and how it happened. But what's not understandable is publishing a set of drawings about Crystal Palace Park, then suddenly switching to some nice shiny drawings about redeveloping Selhurst, all before all of it's ready to go, because then you set expectations you can't meet. And then you bring that point down to what we're seeing this season. To this season is setting expectations we couldn't meet. We set an expectation of a top 10 finish and Roy carrying on the champagne football from last season. I use that phrase because I just read it somewhere else. Champagne football, I don't think I'd classify it as that. But anyway, so we kind of like, that was our expectation going into this season. I say our expectation, I never believed it for a second. And I got a lot of criticism for that, as have many other people. But so be it, right? Everyone wants to think the best and I think the good time is going to roll, right? But the truth is, we set unrealistic expectations because we didn't invest in the squad to the level we should have done. And we brought back a manager who has reverted to type, you know? And you start thinking about this game. Like, look at Eze at the moment, playing out wide. When Roy came back in, he revitalized Eze and Elise by giving them freedom. So why is he taking that freedom away? And it's because it goes back to being scared. It's worried about losing. It's worried about not doing the right things. Worrying about keeping solid. And we sent a team out today against Arsenal to keep solid and we lost 5-0. You know? What can you do with that? There you go. Anyway.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
go ahead.
You know, when he came in last year, he was still hung up on, you know, Vieira still had his tactics in the squad, the mentality. So he just piggybacked off that. And he thought, well, I'll just give it a go because I'm only here for a month or two. And now it's just gone back to Roy Ball, hasn't it?
That's spot on. Yeah.
And imagine if he'd walked after those 10 games. Imagine that was the perfect moment, wasn't it? For him to say, that's it, draw a line under everything. That's the perfect way to end, you know, but he couldn't. He's got the football bug, isn't he? Even talking before the game today, seeing his little face light up about the game ahead and full of hope still. And he loves football and he won't stop. And unfortunately, it's only going to end one way, I think. And I hate to say, I hope it ends that way today, but there you go. Just to be clear, go on, Cara.
Really quickly, sorry, but I think that is the saddest thing, because I think you, like, Roy has done great, some great things for Palace. Parrish has done great things for Palace. And by both of them clinging on, whoever's decision it is, they're tarnishing that, because it is at the moment, it just looks inevitable for both of them that this ends very badly. I don't want like either of their endings at the club and their story of the club to be a really horrible one where everyone's just begging them to go. But that power sits with them as to whether or not that is the ending that they have at the club. And I think it's just so sad if they keep it going and just clinging on this way and don't just see that the time is up, or at least in Parrish's situation, see that he needs to go in a different direction if he wants to stay in his position, because this is just completely untenable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Jordan, you're on your phone. We're using all your data. Go on, go for it.
I think the only thing that Parrish can do now with the current owners is go back to Harrison Blitzer and say to him, I want to renegotiate. You got 18% each or whatever. I want you to put in 18 million each every season for us to use to purchase a player, purely on to purchase a player. We purchase them, they stay, we put release clauses in their contract, and you get, when they get sold, you get your money back plus 25%, and then you just put that money in every season. And that's, I think that's the only way that you can move forward with putting regular money into the club every year.
I'd be up for that.
You know? I'd be more than happy to see that. I can't see it happening, but you never know, hey, Jordan?
No.
Thank you so much for joining us, mate.
Yeah. Sorry, thanks, everyone.
Cheers, bye. Jordan.
Yeah, take care, mate. We'll speak to you again, I'm sure. See all the best.
Aye.
Hambo, can I pose a question for you and people who are waiting to come on quickly? About FFP, something that I think Tim was touching upon. Do we think, given that we are talking about ownership of our own club, inevitably as well, I wonder how much this kind of like clubs being hit with fines and whatever else, and probably the fallout from that being the other clubs being a lot more careful, do we think that's going to have a knock-on impact of maybe some investors that wouldn't go near football being a bit more attracted to coming in because they're not necessarily going to have to go up the people that can just funnel in losses after losses after losses each season? That's kind of part A to the question. And part B is then, does that have the potential to benefit us?
I mean, it's a hard question because the whole thing becomes a little bit circular, doesn't it? And I mean, look, going back to the basics of FFP, like, we are probably in a better position than most, right? I don't know if that's true. I've just said it out loud and I've questioned it. But yeah, we're not spending anything. Like, we have paid absolute incredible attention to our obligations under FFP ever since we've been in the Premier League and before, to be fair. You know, we go back to the time where, you know, on our podcast, we used to speak to Parrish quite regularly. And he was really open, like, about the cycles of FFP, and he would talk us through what, you know, where they were in which cycle, and you know, what point they could decide what to invest in when. And I've lost track of where we are in FFP cycles, by the way. I don't remember. It's like, it's 3-year cyclical, I think. So at one point in those 3 years, you can kind of take a punt as long as you know what you're going to do in the next two. And it's all built on selling enough assets. And obviously the best thing you can possibly do in FFP, which Chelsea are sort of trying to do at the moment, is sell your academy players for large sums of money, because it's all profit and it all counters your FFP thing. So I think that I've sort of talked myself away from remembering the question properly, but I think that we do stand to benefit from others' poor use of FFP, and we do probably there's a lower risk for us as a club that's going to be a thing that trips us up and gets us relegated. But that's no good if you get relegated anyway, through inaction, is it? So you then have the problem of how do you bring in investment? How do you develop as a club? And for a long time, and again, I can only say what's been coming out of the club as the answer to that question, it's invest in the infrastructure. It's to look at the fact that, so we still talked a few years back, one of the biggest drivers for improving, to get for the new standard, improving the corporate facilities, was that brings a significant amount of sponsorship income. So, you know, as fans, we're going, yeah, but I'm still standing knee deep in piss in the Arthur Waite. Thanks very much, mate. But of course, draining the piss out of the Arthur Waite does not get you the £3 million, £4 million a season that it will get you for making the boxes nice and shiny, right? So, you know, that's kind of the sums that they have to do. And you do, as a fan, you do get kind of, you do feel a little bit like, oh, am I even here? And right now, you know, that you couple that feeling with, so you're trying to think logically and support the people making decisions, because look, it's their benefit. Like Steve Parish, Blitzer, Harris, Texter, everybody benefits if Crystal Palace Football Club grows its stature, finishes higher up the league, attracts better players, attracts more attention, attracts bigger sponsors, can then build the stadium bigger, so the income generated gets higher and higher and higher. All those things, it's this kind of snowball effect if it all goes right. But there's so many clubs that's true for, you know, and it just goes back to, you can kind of forget all of that to some degree, because money, I hate to say it, like, I'm not saying the money isn't important. The you know, the income to the club, being able to invest in the squad isn't important. It is. But when you look at a team like Luton is a great example. And there's more than one team like this every single year. And Luton just happens to be the most recent example of this, who've come up with Rob Edwards, other than playing for Palace briefly, on his CV, you know, there's nothing on his CV that says he's going to be this fantastic manager at Premier League level at all. You know, he hasn't got 50 years in the game like Roy Hodgson's got that demand immediate respect. But Rob Edwards has got a team full of League One and Championship players absolutely giving it the best possible go you can imagine at Premier League level. See, they lost to Arsenal. They lost 4-3 to Arsenal. Like, and they were unlucky to lose 4-3 to Arsenal, because they just, they went for it. They backed themselves. They've got a philosophy, but it's not like a complicated, amazing tactical philosophy based on tiki-taka or total football. It's people believing that they're good enough and that together as a team that they can achieve something. And that's completely devoid in everything we do right now, isn't it? Like, you look at the team today, that did not feel like a team that were like, guys, Arsenal are going to want to win this game. It's an away game. You know, we've got players out, but they didn't feel like everybody was together. There wasn't this big huddle and this, you know, people like cheering each other on, got each other's backs, putting in challenges. That's just gone. And that was basic Palace DNA before, wasn't it? Like, that was what we used to love.
A point on that, Hambo, you just reminded me, is at the end of the game, you saw two players who were over by the fans. Anderson, first of all. Now, obviously, you can't see what he's interacting with, but who very clearly said, "What do you want us to do?" And then turned around saying, "Fuck off," right? And then immediately you get Ezra up at the fans just holding his hands up and like applauding the fans and then just holding his hands up. And like you say, that is not a group of players who are going, right, yeah, things are tough, but backs up against the wall, we're going to fight our way out, you know. But that is unhappy players with no direction, very little hope by the looks of it. And we go on from there.
Absolutely. There's a lot of comments coming. I want to quickly jump back to Roy's post-game comments, but some really good, sensible things. I see John Dye, you're back in the chat there, shouting for Mark Robbins as manager. He's done a long apprenticeship in his managerial career, but he's doing some really amazing things at Coventry at the moment. But I seem to remember, John, you were Thomas Frank's agent a few years back, because you used to message every single show when we did watch along saying, "Let's get Thomas Frank as manager." Were you wrong? Probably not. So maybe we should go for Mark Robbins. But anyway, just thought I'd point that out because I noticed it. And let's hope my memory is correct and that was you, John. Otherwise, you'll be very, very, very confused. There's a few stories floating about Potter still, but nothing sort of concrete. I was looking up those at the same time as well. So Roy, after the game, was talking to Match of the Day. He said the following: "The worst thing is that three of the goals all came from corner kicks." You don't say that was the worst thing. Two from theirs and one from ours. Yeah. "And they started a very quick counter, and 3-0 down, you're up against it. okay, I'm not going to nitpick everything because we're here forever. He said, I decided to give some of the younger players a chance on the basis we played in midweek and some of the players had worked very hard. But 3-0 down against a rampant Arsenal is asking for trouble and asking for the two quite simple goals at the end. So he's explaining that we lost 5-0, not 3-0, because he put the kids on. The fact is, two of our major attacking players are not there at the moment. Eze is just coming back from injury, so he is there. Our attacking potential is a bit less at the moment than it would normally, but I don't think we created anywhere near enough chances. You don't think? Okay, well, you don't know. It's a big difference. Arsenal were very good. Whatever we could have done and whatever team we put on the field, we would still have been struggling to contain them, as they do have so much talent and are very well drilled. It's a struggle. There's no doubt we have to keep looking over our shoulder, and we are in a relegation battle. No question about that. I believe the team and club and the group of players we have are more than good enough to get us away from the relegation zone. Of course, at the start of the season, we had hoped we would build on the end of last season. So it's now, yeah, we are, we are in relegation trouble. And he was asked specifically about the fan protest at the end of the game. He said they're entitled to their opinions. They are frustrated, disappointed, and probably angry. We haven't been able to do as well as they would like. One understands that. Crystal Palace fans have dragged us through many difficult situations and helped us to survive at moments when survival looked difficult. We can only hope we can do better and provide them with what they hope to see, which is win more games and move away from the relegation zone. Yes, that would be nice. But to actually play some football would be nice. That's what I would like to see first. So frustrated. And they was asked if he was frustrated, whether he had not had more financial backing. And he said, no, not particularly, because when I went into the job with my eyes open, I knew what my job was and I knew it wasn't to come in with a big treasure chest. I think you're thinking about pirates there, Roy. But anyway, let's move on. I knew it was to be working with what we have here, trying to contain and keeping that team and at least heading towards the middle of the table. That was complicated by the long-term injuries we have had, but I'm hoping when those injuries are not part of the equation, we will do better. So there's a lot of thinking and hoping. Your reaction to that?
Oh, where do you even start? I mean, I'll tell you where I'm going to start. Actually, tell myself where I'm going to start. It is giving the kids a chance. Right, at 3-0 down. So, not to be Eric Cantona, but like, see when drivers are learning to drive a train, yeah? You're not giving them a chance if you hand over the wheel or whatever is used to drive a train when the brakes have just given way and you're coming off the track and then you go, here, right, yeah, going to give you a chance now to learn how to drive a train. That is absolutely ludicrous. And it's something that I wanted to, I've written down to mention anyway, like our season is over, right? It was pretty much final nail in the coffin, losing to Everton midweek, going out the cup. So would you not just think, all right, we're losing these games anyway. Let's just, let's properly give the kids a chance. If we're throwing away this season and we've got really not much to do with it, let's just look at the players we've got to bring on. Going back to what you were saying as a part of that FFP thing, Hambo, as well. You know, let's give them the chance to that we could shift some of them for some money if we need to in the summer, if that's the way that we're going to go. And set up a team around them. Don't bring on James Tompkins at the end of the game. That's not giving the kids a chance. Like, all of it is just absolute nonsense. And I can't, it really baffles me. I just flick between so many different ideas of what is going through his mind and what he's trying to do with the club every single time I hear him speak. Because he must know that is nonsense, surely.
I assume so, but I don't know. My biggest concern in the things that get said is almost week to week. There's a kind of cycle of Roy saying something ridiculous and then backtracking on it.
Yes,
like it's almost every week now, and you know, he kind of, again, his excuse that I mentioned earlier, which is like, because it's, you know, he's in the latter stages of his career, it doesn't really matter anymore. So he just says what he thinks. Well, that's quite revealing, isn't it? If you're saying what you think and then having to backtrack because it's horrendous, then probably, you know, something's wrong there somewhere, isn't it? So it's hard to know whether to take what he says at face value at all. It really is. But, you know, I've been trying to look in those comments and I was trying to look into sort of like the setup for the game and things like that before we got into the stream. And I looked at, as I often do, about the sort of average position report that you can get on whoscored.com, because I think that tells a really good story of the game sometimes. And I think the story of that, I would highlight it by saying, you know, the game we played today, we essentially enabled Arsenal to play one at the back. On average, they had, I've forgotten who it was. My brain doesn't really work. William Saliba, basically. His average position was basically back with the goalkeeper. And then the rest of the team could do what they want for the rest of the game. Like, and so Roy's talking about that their team being well-drilled, but his version of well-drilled and Arteta's version of well-drilled are very, very different and kind of endemic of the problem that we have right now. Our version of well-drilled is zonal marking at set pieces, which we have not changed, and we're still conceding goals all the time about it, you know, because we're just so easy to predict. It's like, okay, run from one zone into another zone, and then that will confuse them. Okay? Like most clubs, at best, if they use zonal, they will do a mix of zonal and man marking, and they'll still man mark tallest players with tallest players, you know, that kind of stuff, real basic stuff. But we don't. We don't do it, and we don't learn. But in all of that, you know, you can analyse that game as much as you like, but what it basically comes down to is watching a team that do not, no matter what they say, they do not have faith in the system that we play and in the decisions being made by the manager. They don't anymore. You know, people talk about losing the dressing room and how it's always obvious. It's not always obvious, because especially when it's a manager that people like on a personal level and respect on a professional level. And that's exactly what we have. But for me, this is not about today. This is long, long, long overdue. He was the wrong choice at the start of the season, and it's been abundantly clear. And you can talk all day about him not having Olise and Eze in the same starting lineup more than once, as much as you like, but that does not explain the approach we've taken in games. It doesn't explain turning up and playing Arsenal the same way you played Luton. Unless you're attacking both that way, because we're turning up to try and nick a point, or maybe hope to win. And I use those words deliberately because it's what Roy says: hope a player will do something that means we can win a game. If I was appointing somebody like in my line of work, without going into too much detail, and they said in their interview, well, I'm going to come in, I'm going to kind of mess around a bit on the computer for a while with them, and at the end of it, I'm going to hope that there's a really good design that comes out at the end of it, I'll go, yeah, all right, cheers. I'll probably get somebody who's got a plan for what they're going to do and how they're going to achieve it, and then has some sort of quality control over the end product. I'm not going to go with hope, because hope isn't really what I'm selling, and I don't think hope is what you should sell as a football manager. I think we've moved on from Roy. We really have, and that's the end of it. John is an entertaining commenter, and I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to flash those up on the screen there, John. So, look, I think that we've been on for well over an hour now, and I believe it's the time where we start to draw this thing to a close. I don't know how long DR usually goes on, because I my brain shuts off long before he does, but I think we've probably hit towards the end of the show. So any last comments that you've got, get them in now. Before we start wrapping things up. But, you know, I suppose, Cara, last thing for you, really. I suppose, like, based on those comments from Roy, based on the performance today, are you expecting anything to change before the Sheffield United game on the 30th?
No, I'm not. Honestly, I'm not.
Right?
And again, I just want to stress, this isn't because I don't want it to or I don't think it should. But I am not in any way hopeful that the club has any kind of backup plan or like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think they're trying to see it through to the end of the season. And Parrish will be like trying to come up with good slogans and stuff that he can give out that will get a good palette. Hey, he might do another mural. Maybe he'll do another mural, right, that he can unleash at the next time we lose 5-0, that will just keep everybody going for a few games. But no, I don't expect anything's going to change between now and Sheffield United.
That's a good idea. Let's find one of those houses once Roy's face painted on it.
Hey, listen, I live in Northern Ireland now, and there's a fair few murals going around. So it's
Yeah, they're very colourful, aren't they? Yeah. But we'll steer clear of that one, I think, for the time being. Lots of people talking about Potter, understandably, in the chat. And I have to say, I don't know what to read into it today. I appreciate the comment made earlier, obviously, that you know, you're saying, Cara, he wouldn't be there for no reason whatsoever, given where he was sitting. It's not like he was in the crowd or anything. He's in the, you know, he's a guest there for some reason. My gut feeling is he's being lined up for something else a bit better than Palace, and he's in there watching some Premier League football. Because he's been linked with the Man United job, hasn't he, if they finally boot Ten Hag. So I don't feel like he was there watching Palace. But if he was, I feel like I said earlier, he'll be a lot less keen to come in and manage Crystal Palace than he would be prior to that game, because there's an awful lot of work to do. And it's a team that are going to be very, very low on morale. But for me, I will accept any change. I'm not expecting it, but I don't know why, because I can't think of a reason to leave him in post. I think the form, the performances, the body language of the players, and the division that is growing between fans and club all point to it being the time to make the change. Right now, you know, we've got a 10-day break till we play Sheffield United. The Sheffield United game is a game that our squad, even with current issues, should win. That's a home game, isn't it, against Sheffield United? So,
it is.
You know, if we're not targeting that for 3 points, then we're doing something very, very wrong. So if you want to give a manager a nice run into a job before he has to go and play Brighton away and then go to Chelsea, that's the perfect opportunity to do that. You're in a transfer window, 10 days prep. You know, I don't see when you're going to get a better opportunity, because the only other choice is wait till the end of the season, and that could easily be too late the way things are right now. But anyway, should we stop there? I need to go and do stuff. It's been a real pleasure coming in and hosting this. I still will probably take DR to task on this for making me talk about a 5-0 defeat. He had some sort of inside knowledge, I feel. I hope he enjoyed himself. He was at the game, so he got some degree of punishment already, to be completely fair to him. But really enjoyed all of your comments. Really enjoyed speaking to a few of you as well. You know, those of you in the comments who didn't try and get on, I think we missed a few people, sadly, because everybody wanted to get a lot off their chest, I think. But those of you we missed, apologies. And those of you that didn't try and get on the show, please do so again in the future. You don't need much. You can do it on your phone. You can, pretty easy to get on. We're nice. We don't mind talking to you. So, you know, get involved. That's what I would say. And just a little thing that DR wouldn't tell you as well. I happen to know that if you go to nordvpn.com/backofthenest, there's a little cheeky 30-day free trial that's available for you there. Those of you that listen to the audio of this that goes out on the podcast feed will get some more detail on that. But, you know, maybe I'll pop that in the chat if you go to nordvpn.com/backofthenest. A little bit of sponsorship going on.
Turned into Stewie from Family Guy.
I did for some reason turn into Stewie from Family Guy. And that is a sign that I need to end this stream immediately. Cheers all. Take care. Bye. Up the Palace, etc.
Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.